couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Gemini Man, The Addams Family, Jexy, Little Monsters, and Mary. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Toy Story 4 and Annabelle Comes Home. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The one piece of news that I saw, and this isn't making a whole lot of news, especially for just mainstream people, or even mainstream critics for that matter, but since I'm such a horror junkie, this kind of caught my eye. Apparently, there's a law that was written, I believe, in the 70s that takes copyright that is, once it's sold, it reverts to the author, to the original copyright holder. So there's actually a whole bunch of old horror movies from the 80s that are getting ready to revert to the authors so that they don't have it at the studio, can't just make the sequels or remakes. And that's part of the reason why they've pushed out so many 80s remakes like Child's Play or Pet Sematary recently that we've had. And some of these things, especially, and it's important for somebody like Stephen King because he's getting a bit of a resurgence. He's going to start getting some of the properties that he sold in the 70s and 80s to everyone from major motion picture studios to Dino De Laurentiis. And that's all going to come back to him. And also for some of the franchises, I think some of the franchises that might be affected include Predator. I've heard that includes sometimes some of the slasher movies like Friday the 13th. Not necessarily to the original Sean Cunningham, but the guy who wrote it, there's going to be right reversion for that. And the reason that makes a big difference is because, of course, they want to continue these franchises and start them anew. I mean, look what happened with Halloween has gotten a big resurgence, and they're kind of in a perpetual state of always trying to make a new Friday the 13th movie. So this is interesting. I've seen a lot of horror fans get excited about this because it's, oh, isn't this great? It goes back to the original rights holder, and then they can make the movies, and it's not just going to be studio junk turned out. Well, the reality is I think you're still going to get studio junk. It's just the money has to be paid to the original rights holder. I mean, Stephen King might get a chance to say, hey, maybe I'll make a decent Children of the Corn adaptation sometime. But there's a lot of movies that are going to be showing up in this. But you're still going to see the remakes and reboots and franchise attempts because if they sold the rights once, they're probably going to sell it again because the rights are worth something. And it's Hollywood, and Hollywood wants to make new movies. But at the very least, they can renegotiate how much they're involved. Another piece of news that I saw that I found really interesting, and it's about the new Star Wars movie, is apparently the character of Rose Tycho has been stripped out of some of the toys and merchandising. Now, the last time this happened was when The Force Awakens came out, or prior to it coming out, and the character of Rey didn't show up in the early merchandise and some of the toys. And that spurred the hashtag Where's Rey? Now this has spurned a hashtag, Where's Rose? Here's why I don't think it's going to make the impact that the Where's Rey hashtag did. First of all, Rey is sort of the centerpiece to the new Star Wars universe. She is one of the main characters. If you were to say, who were the Han Solo, Princess Leia, Luke Skywalker of this new series, it's Rey, Finn, and Poe Dameron. That's really who the three good guy characters are. Rose is a secondary character at best who was shoehorned in an unpopular Star Wars movie that generally a lot of fans didn't like. Now, I know a lot of people say, oh, toxic masculinity, and they all attacked Kelly Marie Tran. And I mean, no, it's not okay to attack an actress who plays a character in a movie, but the character of Rose is a bad character. The character of Rose is not a good Star Wars level character. She's not critical to anything. And I heard somebody say, oh, well, she's critical to challenging Finn to stay in the Resistance. No, she's not. She was just there to cause problems and be a mess. And look, I didn't particularly like that character. I think there's a lot of fans who didn't. And just because you're one of those people who didn't like Star Wars in the 70s and 80s and 90s, but suddenly I love Star Wars now and bring the feminism, that's not what it's about. And there's so much wrong with Rose's character. I noticed it a long time ago when she wasn't even showing up in the trailers that I think they're abandoning Rose Tycho. At the very least, reshape the character. You can reshape the character and have her be terrible in The Last Jedi because you can't change that movie. I guess you can because it's a Star Wars movie, but you can't change that movie now for how it means for this next series. But let's put it, she was road tested and not a whole lot of people liked. Oh, there's certain very vocal people who did, but I don't see anyone clamoring for a spinoff of Rose Tycho or really caring about her at all. I really don't. And I know a lot of Star Wars fans. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is 1917, directed by Sam Mendes. It opens on Christmas Day.
You have a brother in the 2nd Battalion.
Yes, sir.
They're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you fail, it will be a massacre.
We've got orders to cross here.
That is the German front line.
Hold on!
If we're not clever about this, no one will get to your brother.
Now, I know it's been about 100 years from World War I. And I mean, when I say about 100, it's because it was a world war, it spanned several years, just as World War II did. So we're right in the middle of the 100-year anniversary of World War I. And Hollywood has rediscovered World War I. For a long time there, I mean, there was a stretch of time where no one even, like, acknowledged World War I as a cinematic backdrop. It was always World War II. I mean, everything was about World War II. Well, recently, with movies like Wonder Woman and there was that documentary that Guillermo del Toro was involved in, which had all that footage from World War I. And you see World War I showing up in a lot of things, and I think that's because the 100-year anniversary, and we're looking back on that a little bit more. This one looks like it's an interesting look at World War I, and it looks like it's going to be an interesting action film. It's going to be a war movie, and I just hope that it's one of the better Sam Mendes movies that has action and drive and character, and it doesn't become some slag of a movie where it just winds in on itself with weeping and hand-wringing, and I just hope that all the battle sequences aren't just in the trailer, that it's more than just a bunch of people walking around in the mud. But, you know, this looks like it's going to be a big Christmas tentpole release. So I'm looking forward to it, but I have reservations because, you know, war movies can be not so good at times. The other one I want to hit is The King's Man, which opens on February 14th.
We are the first independent intelligence agency. Preserving peace and protecting life.
Welcome to the club.
While governments wait for orders, our people take action. Our enemies think we are gentlemen. But reputation is what people think of you.
Of course, a prequel to The Kingsman, which is the spy movie with Taron Egerton and Colin Firth. And it has a good cast to it. It's got Ralph Fiennes in there. I'm interested in seeing him. It looks like it's going to be fun and exciting and have a lot of the action and the elements that made The Kingsman good in the first place. It's also directed by Matthew Vaughn, so it's got the same guy being involved in it. I'm somewhat optimistic about this one. The February 14th release date could be good or bad. I mean, February is not the terrible time to release a movie that it used to be. But it's also not a movie that I'd expect to be dropping in February. So we'll see. The jury's out on this one. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Little Monsters and Mary.
Boys and girls of every age, wouldn't
Wouldn't you like to see something strange?
Come with us and you will see. This is our town of Halloween. This is Halloween.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The first movie on the movie review list is Little Monsters. It's a Hulu movie. It's dropping on Hulu. It actually had a very small limited release earlier this week, like on Tuesday, in like New York and LA. So they actually got theatrical showings before it dropped online. But Hulu now has it. So if you have Hulu, you can go check it out now. In Little Monsters, a kindergarten teacher struggles to keep control of her class when a zombie outbreak happens during a field trip.
Next stop, Pleasant Valley.
We're having a super fun time on our trip.
I want you all in a line in front of me and away we go.
Why are we stopping?
There must be something in the way.
What is it, Miss Caroline?
Oh, God. Stop the tractor!
Are you okay?
Yes!
Don't be scared.
Who remembers how to play tag? Well, those funny-looking people out there are it.
This stars Lupita Nyong'o, and I have to say, I'm a huge fan of Lupita Nyong'o. I think she's a gorgeous woman and a fantastic actress. I think she has a depth of emotion with incredibly expressive eyes. And she is not given enough work, in my opinion. I found it interesting that after she won the Academy Award, suddenly they're like, we're going to cast you in Star Wars and The Jungle Book and this and that. But we're never going to actually put you on screen. It's all going to be mocap. So she didn't get to like even show her face for a while after being in some of the biggest movies. And then she started doing some other things, like she did Queen of Katwe, and she was, of course, involved in Black Panther. But I think where she really shined this year in particular was in Us. I thought that she commanded that performance and she held that movie together. And she was the focal point of that film, bona fide movie star in that movie. And I felt the same way in Little Monsters. Now, Little Monsters, it also goes down a horror movie path, but it's a kind of a sweet horror movie in the sense that it's not about a zombie outbreak, because I'm sort of zombie to death. I've seen so many zombie movies, and there's been so many zombie elements to everything that I think we're sort of running the course. This is sort of like the romantic vampire arc that we saw 15 years ago that kind of got drilled into the ground with Twilight. But Little Monsters, it has this heart to it because at its core, it's about her and this chaperone on the event, one of the kids' uncles, trying to sort of shield the kids from the horrors of the zombie outbreak. I mean, first of all, if you've never had to be in the presence of a dozen five-year-olds, you have no idea how insane that can be. And the controlled chaos. It's funny, I had my cousin come over and she brought her son, Cody the Destroyer, who I used to babysit, and his sister, Mika the Merciless. I used to babysit them a couple times a week, and she brought them over because they were like selling popcorn. And she was telling us about how she went to one of their preschool's events, and she was like, it was just insane, sort of the controlled chaos that you have when like you have little kids. And like, my wife's a teacher, and so she's done everything from first grade to fifth grade. And so she understands what it's like to try to wrangle these kids. And there's a charm to that. And there's a reality to that, that it's not for everybody. Not everybody can do it. And being able to relate to the kids, you can tell that Lupita Nyong'o has this little bit of a charm where the kids will focus on her. And she's so sweet in the movie in trying to shield the kids from all the awfulness that's happening, that it really has this charm that I can't deny. Now, of course, it's violent. I mean, there's a lot of violent stuff going on, and it's not that there aren't other kids. It's like a mini golf petting zoo place. And so there's other people that are zombies. I mean, there's 10-year-old kids that are zombies outside, and they're dealing with that. So it is very dark. I wouldn't say it's a kid's movie, but you know, those, you got to look at, once a kid turns into a zombie, you kind of have to write them off, I guess, in these movies. And Josh Gad plays he's sort of like a kid show host. But of course, you know, once he takes the veneer of having to be on for the stage off, he's a horrible person, and they're dealing with him, and he of course hates the kids, but you know, she's of course trying to protect the kids, and the uncle in the whole thing is trying to, you know, he's trying to be a good uncle, but he's also trying to get a date with her. But if anything, this movie shows that I think, first off, Lupita Nyong'o is being overlooked by Hollywood for action adventure roles. I mean, you want to reboot Tomb Raider again? Put in Lupita Nyong'o. I think if you want to reboot Terminator with a totally new cast, put in Lupita Nyong'o. I think she is dead on, can do the action. She's beautiful. She's a great actress, and she has that range. I really think there's an untapped resource here that Hollywood is overlooking. And I think Little Monsters shows it. So while it has some very dark humor to it, and stuff that it's like, there are moments where they have a joke or something happened that I was like, wow, that is grim. But it's still a fun little movie. It's cute and adorable. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I got to say, check out Little Monsters, get it on Hulu, and eventually it'll hit DVD and Blu-ray, but you can check it out on Hulu right now. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Mary. A family buys a boat that has a dark past and seems attached to a malevolent spirit.
In this boat, I see our future.
It's a 50-year-old catch, and it needs work.
I thought this was something we could finally make ours.
Yeah!
Every time this ship went out onto open water, people disappeared.
The thing about boats is there's nowhere to run.
We should turn back.
We're too far to turn back.
You think you can erase the past?
I don't want to hear any more about curses.
What I find fascinating about this movie is, I mean, it's not a big movie. It's a small little movie. It's a very limited cast, and most of it takes place on this boat in the ocean. And while it's always expensive to shoot on an actual boat, I mean, it's doing stuff under into the cabin and stuff. It's, you can do it with a reasonable crew. You don't have a crew or a cast of thousands. Now, Emily Mortimer plays the mother in this, and I'm a big fan of hers. She's getting a little older, so she's in fewer movies as sort of like the main lead. The other person who's in it is Gary Oldman. And it goes to show you one of the reasons I've always appreciated Gary Oldman as an actor. This guy won the Oscar for Best Actor a couple years ago for The Darkest Hour. And of course, he was the focus on everything. He's played Commissioner Gordon in the Batman movies. But he's still doing this rinky-dink little small movie because it gives him a chance to act and do a small little movie. He's a working actor, and I've always loved that. There's a British attitude, and you see this a lot in the BBC where you watch people on television, and you know, like Hugh Bonneville's in everything. For some reason, he seems to be in everything, and that's because they float from production to production, and they always want to work no matter how big of a movie they are. That's why you get people who are in the Harry Potter franchise and Doctor Who apparently slumming it in a smaller movie. Now, the film itself, there's not a whole lot to it. It's basically a haunted boat movie, which is entertaining to a point, but it can get kind of tedious. I mean, the movie itself's less than 90 minutes. And it has some good moments. It has some good scares. It has some very good acting by both Emily Mortimer and Gary Oldman. It's kind of predictable, but there's no real, no pun intended, no real depth to it. It's very much on the surface. It just seems to be about this family that is having issues, and they're on a boat with a ghost on it. I think it hints at something that's even bigger, that's even scarier. The fact that the ocean's big and there are people that go missing on the ocean all the time. So I think that they squander a great idea in this anything can happen out there on the ocean and there's nowhere to run, and it turns into pretty much a paint-by-numbers haunted house movie, only it's a floating house. It's not that great. I'm going to have to give it a kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
That's it for the segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Gemini Man and the Addams Family and Jexy. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the big movie this week. Well, it might be the big movie. Who knows? I don't know. I'm having trouble deciding what's going to be the big movie because I don't know. There's something about this film. Well, I'll talk about it here in a minute, but there's something about this movie that looks like it could be a huge hit, but also maybe not. And that is Gemini Man. Will Smith plays a skilled assassin who discovers a younger version of himself trying to kill him.
I think I know why he's as good as you. He is you.
25 years ago, they made you from me. They chose me because there's never been anybody like me. We have to end this right now.
You have all of his gifts without his pain.
You made a person out of another person. Then you sent me to kill him.
I knew it was directed by Ang Lee, and as we were getting closer to the release of this, it wasn't screened, by the way, just to let everybody know. It was screened in limited markets, was not screened in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from, and that's usually a bad sign. That shows that they're either trying to control the narrative or they're worried about it. I mean, a big movie like this, an Ang Lee movie from Paramount starring Will Smith, you should have the budget to screen this movie, for crying out loud. But as I saw some of the regional press coming out with the statements and comments, what I've been seeing is less about the story and more about, well, it's sort of this, the next step in filmmaking. And the last time I really heard that, I would say, was when Avatar came out about 10 years ago. Now, this one is being released in 3D. And first on the 3D, I will say this, it is a movie that works in 3D. There's a lot of 3D awareness. There's some gimmicky shots. There's a couple that are a little overly gimmicky, but there are some pretty cool shots, and they work to use the 3D. So you don't forget that it's there. I mean, there's a lot of depth, and the shooting of the movie, from a technical perspective, the cinematography looks really good, but it's also shot with a high frame rate, which means 60 frames a second, which is twice as many as normal projection. And you have to go to a special place that has the projection for that. To get the high frame rate version of it, the last time they released something that I remember the high frame rate being a big deal was The Hobbit, when they did, I believe, the first Hobbit movie. I only reached one of them in HFR, and that's because a lot of people complained, because with high frame rates, as you will notice on your TV, if you put the refresh rate high, you'll get it to look like a soap opera. It'll look like it's shot on video versus film. And most people don't react well to that. They don't like that. Now, the high frame rate works for the action sequences in particular. And there's also stuff shot with a like lower light or higher contrast that you can see better with the high frame rate. You see them, the movement smoother. Now, if it's just people sitting there and talking with a backdrop, it looks a little digitally produced. It looks like, some of the shots were taken out of a behind the scenes footage from Entertainment Tonight and not from the actual film cameras. And that's a shame, because the better it looks, actually the cheaper it looks. And that can be a problem. I don't think the HFR is going to be a thing that a lot of people like. And I know that James Cameron's coming out with the Avatar movies like that. But again, you're talking about having to upgrade all the cinemas, and they just did that less than 10 years ago for the 3D stuff. Now, when it comes to the movie itself, I did not like this. I felt that the dialogue was really stilted. I mean, like, really. And here's where I kind of want to see it again in regular digital mode, because the high frame rate made it look cheap. And I couldn't tell if that look of cheapness was playing into the corniness of the dialogue. It just felt like it was some well shot, but still shot on video student film that just happened to get Will Smith and Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Clive Owen in it. You know, so these dialogues, especially Clive Owen, who plays the bad guy, I mean, some of the dialogue is just really awful and corny. I mean, Will Smith still has his swagger and his control, but yeah, the story was okay. I mean, it's just the sort of the twin thing, but there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense, and there's action sequences that are cool. But then when you get to the explanations, there's like, well, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character is really annoying. She monologues with the whole movie, and she's really offers nothing to the movie, except they said, well, we need a woman in here, so let's put her in as his sidekick. And it never ends. It is kind of the perfect movie for Will Smith, because he can be in it twice, and it's him having conversations with himself. So it's all about Will Smith's ego. But the movie itself, just, it was a bore between action sequence. I mean, the sequences were cool to watch, and they looked better when you have fast moving things. And I saw that with The Hobbit, when there's a lot of movement you don't get that camera blur as much. And so it looks crisper and very vibrant. But like I said, when they're having either a walk and talk scene or sitting around, it still just, it looks cheap. It looks like a soap opera. And I don't think we're going to get past that for a while. So I didn't like this movie. I mean, certainly not the plot. There's certain elements I think are neat about it, but it's not worth checking out. I don't think. I'm going to have to say Gemini Man sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's hit a couple of them that I did not see, because also these are not screened. Hollywood is dialing back on the screenings of the average movie because I don't know why. I think they're worried about advanced critics and they want to control the narrative. And I think at a certain point, they're just shutting it down because anybody can go see this on a Thursday night. But this is what we get now. And we've got the Addams Family. The creepy and kooky family from Charles Addams cartoons comes to life in this animated feature.
Get out!
It's hideous.
It's horrible.
It's home. Don't forget to kick your father goodnight.
Yes, Mother.
Huxley! F6! Fire in the hole!
I was always a big fan of the Addams Family TV show. I remember watching it as a kid. What's funny is I associate it with Cleveland, because when I go up to visit my family in Cleveland, it would always be in heavy rotation on the Cleveland stations in the 70s and 80s. And it still showed up on the Columbus stations when I was home, but it just either the time slot or it was against something that I was watching elsewhere. I just seemed to watch it most when I was in Cleveland. And it's a fun little series. I thought the movies were kind of cool too, back in the 90s. I'm curious to see the animated film, because I love sort of like the horror backdrop to it. And I have a feeling it's going to feel a lot like Hotel Transylvania. I mean, it's not meant to be horror, but it has all these horror elements. I'm also interested in the look and the way they do the versions of the characters to compare it to the original Charles Addams comic strip, which of course looks different than the live action versions of it, either as a TV show. But anyways, I gotta say the Addams Family gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Really quick, I gotta talk about the last movie, which is Jexy. Adam Devine plays a man who is buying a smartphone only to have the AI inside fall for him and become an aggressive, overattached girlfriend.
Hello, my name is Jexy, and I am here to make your life better.
Whoa, look at that. That's cool.
I will need the passwords to all of your accounts. How can I help you?
Let's get dinner.
You look like you could use a salad, Phil.
What kind of phone is this?
You promised you'd be home by 11 to watch Cupcake Wars with me.
Okay, but...
You are going to pay for this. What does this girl have that I don't have?
Well, a soul. For one.
Does she have Google Maps?
No.
She sucks. I control your email and bank accounts. No one puts baby in a corner.
I remember when the movie Her came out with Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson as the voice of the smartphone. That was a more serious look at this sort of relationship between a person and the AI, and it had a lot more to say. This just is sort of a straight up comedy. And as much as I think Adam Devine is funny, and I think Rose Byrne, who plays the voice of Jexy, I think she has a lot of comedic talent. This movie, I just don't get a feeling that this movie's going to have enough to it. This feels like a one-note sketch on Saturday Night Live, or something that could have maybe been stretched into a 20 or 30-minute short film. Can it be an entire feature? I don't know. I don't think that the studio knows either or is confident about it, because while they're advertising like crazy, they didn't screen it. So I can go only on the trailers. So this one also gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about box office and the home cinema roundup featuring Toy Story 4 and Annabelle Comes Home. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the show. We're done with the movie reviews, but it's time to look at the box office. And of course, the big box office news from last week was Joker completely cleaned up. And what's funny is it's one of these movies that it's still considered a success, huge success, because it made like $96 million last weekend. And there's nothing bad about that at all, even close to being upsetting. But what's funny is I saw it started out saying, well, it might make in the 80s and then maybe in the 90s, like low 90s. And then suddenly I saw a blip of them saying, well, maybe it'll make over 100 million. And they pulled back. This is a movie that is doing better than it really, quote unquote, should have. It also is tracking very close to the American and or North American box office overseas. It's made slightly more overseas, but it's going to crack 300 million this weekend worldwide. It's got going in the weekend, it had 129 million domestically and 152 million overseas. Usually you don't see them kind of neck and neck like that as often. So which means it's being received well overseas. And this is going to be a massive moneymaker for Warner Brothers. And it's also the fact that it was rated R, that it's a dark character, it shows that there's still a lot of value in R-rated movies. And that's not something that people have questioned. I mean, It Chapter 2 was a huge hit. And even though it didn't make the same amount as the first one, it's still a big hit as an R-rated movie. Same thing happened. Us was a big hit. That's an R-rated hit this year. John Wick 3 is a big hit. That's an R-rated hit. And there's nothing wrong with R-rated movies. R-rated movies are fine. It's funny. I remember as a kid and even going into college when I go to church and you have those share your concerns and joys during your service. And somebody would, there was always somebody going, I read an article that said that R-rated movies aren't doing as well and family movies do better. And I just think that's a joy. Why is it a joy that somebody can't like an R-rated movie? Yeah, maybe you don't like it. Then don't watch the movie. I think it's great that there's entertainment that's split up for adults and grown-ups and kids, and everybody can have something, and I'm all okay with that. But The Joker totally beat everybody last weekend by a mile. And unless Gemini Man can really, really pull it up, it may end up winning again this weekend. I mean, certainly the buzz is helping it out. I mean, the negative buzz is helping it out. And the fact that there are stories of people walking out. I remember it was like the Daily Mirror in the UK published a story about that this week, that people are walking out of Joker. Well, that's just going to make people want to go see it even more. So I think it's going to do well. And I think it'll be really interesting if a arguably comic book movie with Joaquin Phoenix beats an action movie with Will Smith. So, you know, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for that this weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first movie I want to hit is Toy Story 4, which of course came out this week and continues the multifaceted Toy Story franchise. On a road trip, Woody and the gang try to keep control of Bonnie's handcrafted favorite toy, Forky.
Forky is the most important toy to Bonnie right now. We all have to make sure nothing happens to him.
Woody, we have a situation.
I am not a toy. I was made for soup, salad, maybe chili, and then the trash.
Buzz, we've got to get Forky.
Affirmative.
Why am I alive? You're Bonnie's toy. You are going to help create happy memories that will last for the rest of her life.
One of the things about this movie when I saw it in theaters, and I mean, the sentiment holds up. The first three movies were so perfect. To me, they're five stars plus. If you could give more than five stars to these movies, Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 are going to have them. Those are all three beautiful facts. I mean, I remember when I saw Toy Story way back in the 90s, I was blown away and I loved it and every minute of it. And then I saw Toy Story 2 and I said, they can't possibly do another good. Oh my God, that one was great. And then they did Toy Story 3 years later. And I'm like, well, this is just going to be a cash. Oh my gosh, this one's awesome too. And now they did Toy Story 4 and Toy Story 4. It's fun. It's good. It's good. It's a good movie and kids are going to love it. It's a Disney movie and it's exactly what you'd want from a Toy Story movie. It's not that grand slam home run. That's, I think, what I said this summer when I reviewed it. I mean, all the other ones are grand slam home runs. This is a home run. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's a good movie. It's a sweet film. Go see it. Go get the DVD. Go get the Blu-ray. Go buy the Blu-ray. You know, here's the thing. Disney's got their new Disney Plus service, and yes, this is going to show up on the Disney Plus service in a couple months, but with your Blu-ray, your DVD, and your digital code, if something goes wrong with the Disney Plus service, or say they just decide to discontinue it in 10 years, you can still pull out your DVD player and play the physical disc. And that's one of the reasons why physical media is so good. And the Toy Story saga, it continues and it diversifies a little bit. And what's funny is, you know, going back and looking at this, the movie itself, while it has some charming things, and of course the animation is, I mean, just, it's, the, Pixar's gotten so good at the animation, you don't even consider it animation anymore. I mean, there's a cat in this movie, and you watch the cat and you're just like, is that a real cat? Compare it to the dog in the first Toy Story, which, you know, looked like something drawn with a Sharpie or something like that. But in Toy Story 4, it does almost feel like the end of Avengers Age of Ultron, where they're like, we're going to have to phase out some of the original Avengers, and we've got these new Avengers that are going to show up. And that didn't quite launch because nobody wanted at the time to see a movie with Falcon and Wanda and Vision at that time. But now I think you could do an Avenger movie, and you don't have to have Iron Man and Hulk and Captain America. You can have all these other characters that they're building this universe. And in a way, Toy Story kind of feels that same way, that they're like, hey, if you want to make more Toy Story movies, you can. There's other toys in the toy box for this. And, you know, that's okay. I think it's fine to put an end to the story of Woody necessarily, because what more can you say with how many more crises of consciousness can Woody go through? But you can do a lot of stuff with all the other characters. So, you know, I'm all for it. Toy Story 4 is a sweet movie. It's wonderful. It's sweet. It's a Pixar movie. It's everything you want from a film. And the Blu-ray has a bunch of stuff. It has like deleted scenes and, behind the scenes stuff about Woody and Buzz and Bo Peep, how she got rebooted. So yeah, it's a great little set of stuff. And it's got, you know, it's loaded with, you got the digital code too in there. So check it out. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
The next movie I want to talk about on Blu-ray is Annabelle Comes Home. While babysitting for Ed and Lorraine Warren's daughter, a teenager invites a friend over who unexpectedly unleashes the evil of the Annabelle doll.
Everything you see in here is either haunted, cursed, or has been used in some kind of ritualistic practice.
Don't your parents keep any creepy stuff around?
We keep it all locked away in a room so that we're safe. It's not really good for anyone to go in there.
What did you do?
Who?
Annabelle.
I'm sorry.
What else did you touch?
Everything.
I'm a big fan of the Conjuring series. I like the first two movies, I think, are both very good. When The Conjuring came out, it was like a 1-2 punch from Insidious, where the big name of the game was found footage, and so it was all, you know, people running around video cameras, and James Wan came in and said, no, we're going to do deliberate, slow-paced horror movies that are done like they did them when they made stuff like The Amityville Horror and The Exorcist. And then they spun off the Annabelle series, and I like the Annabelle series. I actually like the first Annabelle. I think the second one's quite good, and this one's a lot of fun. The Nun has its issues, and The Curse of La Llorona was okay. But Annabelle Comes Home, one of the things I like about this movie is it just has fun with all the other artifacts in the Lorraine and Ed Warren demon room. What else? What, an artifact room? Is that what you want to call it? It shows these tastes of all the different artifacts that are in there. Some are real things. Some are made up. There is one, they have a werewolf at a certain point, and that, I guess that actually is based on one of the stories that there was some werewolf type thing involved. I don't know. Was it something like, you know, the Hound of Baskervilles? I don't know. But its appearance in the movie is a little cheesy. It doesn't work quite well. But a lot of the other stuff, because it's just these kids caught in the house with all this crazy crap from this artifact room coming after them. And that's, I think, what's neat. And really what, you know, what this is a nice little sampler of saying, here's 15 other movies we can make in the Conjuring universe. So, you know, buckle your seatbelts. And they even talk about that in the special features behind the scenes on this one. One of the things I like about the behind the scenes special features, they have these neat little interviews with some of the actors who play the demons and the monsters in here, which is cool. It gives them a little bit of a spotlight. And I love character actors who are doing horror movie stuff, people who do very physical work, that's often something where you don't get to see their face because they're in makeup and masks. But yeah, Annabelle Comes Home, I think it's a worthy inclusion in the Annabelle series. Actually, this series is a very strong one. Usually the third movie in a series isn't that good, but this one is definitely worth checking out. But I have to say, Annabelle Comes Home totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other movies this week that are out on DVD and Blu-ray include Midsommar, Shazam, the complete live-action series. That's, of course, what was on TV on Saturday mornings back in the 70s and 80s. That is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be coming back talking about Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, and Zombieland Double Tap. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.